Hi, I'm Josh, and listen up, you primitive alien screwheads. This is my bisexual lighting, and I'm Ash.
Hey, this is Matt, and I think Grapes of Death was this week's piece de raisons de la mort.
It is one of the truly most wonderful titles in the original language. It's just
poetry.
the mort, I think, is the thing that really does it. It's just sort of like, it's just so funny sounding. This is Charlie Dylan Austin. It is funny that as we get older, we can't get our act together quick enough. So then we kind of enjoy each other's company for a while. And then we look at the clock and going like, it's like, this night call. This night call will be the end of us, and then we'll lose our sleep. And all of us are not young any longer. So it's sort of like, it's our own piece of resistance, I guess you could say.
And we heard it through the grapevine that this is Harshal Hot Dog.
Hey.
So first up, we have a short called The Storm, or just Storm, Tormenta. This is a movie about a couple who wake up in the middle of the night to find that they are trapped in a horror movie, and that they can see the camera and are horrified by it, but they can't, like, we can't ever see the camera for obvious reasons.
Yeah, they're just like talking to us when they're talking to camera.
Mm-hmm. My favorite is when she's trying to stab the camera, and every time she swings, suddenly it's across the room because it's the other angle.
Yeah.
Like, there's a few different things they do in this that, like, on the surface are like, they seem like, you know, very straightforward or very kind of simple, whatever else. But I would be willing to bet that these guys really sat and worked out, how does that shot look in 1,000 horror movies? Like, what does this one do, or how does this angle go? And like, so there's like these like non-verbal, non-described sort of visual cues, and I was like, oh, hats off, like, well done, because a few of them made me giggle. I was like, oh, it's just like, that was great. And then like as the gimmick kind of starts building up a bit, like the whole thing with the camera, like they keep turning around, like, oh, I think we're making it worse, and the whole like, fake, if we just stay still, nothing will happen. Fades out, like, oh, I think it's working, like, whoop, back up again, like, oh, it's perfect. Such a Friday the 13th thing. And I was like, ah, it's great. So like, it was very clever. Like, its execution is good. It was very clever in that regard. Like, I kind of would have liked a little bit more, you know, there, but as it was, I thought it was very clever and very, very creative kind of way to, because we've seen other ones that are like, oh, we're in a thing or we're in a whatever.
Yeah.
It kind of can fall flat a lot, you know, so I don't think this thing keeps a good clip.
Yeah, it doesn't go too broad, I feel like, and it doesn't, like, you never stop being at least a little invested in the characters themselves. And I think that makes it work a little better too, because if it were just like, now we're just going to wink and nod and you all get what we're doing here, then
yeah, I'm just, that would be a little less. You can watch our sense of smug self-satisfaction. But I thought this was clever and fun. And like, it's, I feel like it's, yeah, it is definitely slight. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it clocks in like right around 8 minutes. And I feel like they're really teetering on the edge of too much of this. But I was kind of curious to see if you guys would go for it or think it was a little too cheeky. But I'm glad you guys liked it, because I thought it was clever. Like, it doesn't work perfectly, but it works a lot. So
now I feel like you get enough variation in what's happening that I didn't feel the length. Mm-hmm. I wasn't looking for the exit.
Nice.
The only thing I really wanted was when but probably would have wrecked the tone, was when the guy was trapped behind the locked door and the camera did the like pull back and then go sideways through the wall to the other side. I so wanted him to follow the camera.
That would have been cool.
Like, shit, there's no wall there. Like, okay.
Just like, oh, right. It's set up like a sitcom set.
But yeah, I could see how that would push it just a little too far in that direction. So mm-hmm.
I did like that, like, they it. had our patented look before you stab situation. It's like, mm-hmm.
I did like the like turn, there's that moment where like the light comes up on the scissors.
Yeah.
And then when she turns around, there's just like 50 billion floating scissors. I was like, that's great. Like, that shit made me laugh.
Yeah,
that's some like, yeah, that's like Wile E. Coyote shit.
Yeah, they're just like, you can't make me pick up the scissors. And it's like, oh, can't I?
Well, I kept thinking of stuff like kind of like the third level spinoff, or not spinoff, like third level ripoffs of like Scream or prior to that, like Halloween and Friday the 13th, where, you know, like every time, especially if you watch the old like Friday ripoff kind of stuff from like the early 80s, it's like every single time there's like nine objects in a home. Two of them are paintings, one of them is a table, and then there's a desk, and then the three other implements that are required for the plot are there on the desk. And mm-hmm. it's kind of like, so I kind of love that the scissors was kind of like, yeah, like Josh, you said that perfectly. This is like, the scissors is sort of like him.
Yeah, the scissors are great.
I kind of like that. I was like, but just on the side of like not being so overt that this like seems goofy, it was enough that it's like, all right, well done. So, yeah, I would say watch this. That's cool.
Nice yeah, done, same. Folks.
Word.
Do you want to start with Night Call?
Yeah, sure.
Or yeah. Llamada en la Noche, where we have a locksmith who, at the end of his shift, gets a call from a lady who wants to be let into an apartment. She's moderately sketchy, but manages to convince him that it is her apartment, even though she has no ID, and then promptly dips out of said apartment with bag full of money, leaving him holding the bag because he's not holding the bag, I guess.
Hi-oh.
With a with like French mobsters or Belgium, I guess. We're in Belgium, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so you know, he waffles for a bit about what he wants to do, and so from there it is just the kind of guy who's in way over his head, just escaping by the skin of his teeth through all of these crazy circumstances until things finally come to a head. And so this is that, like, I don't know what you call an urban survival horror, you know, like, or thriller. There's a ton of those. Yeah. Like where somebody is just, oh shit, all of these people are out to get me and I have no skills to speak of, and I just will barely escape every time, and that's super entertaining.
Whatever that genre is called, it appears to be the same one. What's that new one called? Is it Trouble Every Day? That's coming up. That's again the same idea. Like, dude is on the wrong side of like eight different groups of bad guys and is just scrambling to survive. Mm-hmm. There's got to be a name for that.
Not subject. Trouble Every Day, because that's the shitty Vincent Gallo movie.
Oh, no, it's the other one then.
It's the one. It's the new Paul Thomas Anderson, isn't it?
Yes, that's the one. Yeah. I can't remember what it's called though.
Oh, yeah.
I saw both trailers in front of the same movie, but
it's kind of dope.
Yeah, it looks really fun. The one with, isn't it Kravitz and, dude from the motorcycle movie last spring.
That shit. Motorcycle movie.
Was it just the Bike Riders? The guy that played the guy that wasn't Tom Hardy.
I think a lot of actors have played that role, to be honest.
It turns out it's you have to work for scale. Oh, you mean no shortage of people.
Oh, the guy who played Elvis.
Austin Butler. Austin
Butler, yeah.
Yes, it's the one of, him and Zoe Kravitz, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, that seems like the same kind of a thing, which is just sort of, I guess you could just call it like an out of the frying pan into the fire movie where every scene is
one battle after another.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you.
Is the title, yeah.
But yeah, it's like every scene is an escalation whose like release valve is also the setup for the next scene's escalation.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, you know, every now and then we talk about like wanting a film to have a pulse. This one is definitely is really rapid and very, very intense and a ton of fun. Like, you manage to really get invested in our hero. What is it? Maddie? Is that what it was?
Maddie. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just being like looking like just an average Joe, you know, like they set him up being perfectly like working class Joe. And then just being fucked beyond all comprehension. And like, that's a great way to just instantly have sympathy and root for this guy. And he's clever and resourceful and seems like a good person. So that makes it real fun.
Well, and it's also like this guy's a first time feature director. And it's like, this was my favorite thing from Fantastic Fest last year. It was just like, and it's hard to describe a movie that's so executed at this level where you're just sort of like, just rapt attention. Plus it's fun. Plus it's stressful. And plus you're just like, everyone will stop and marvel, like, how the fuck did they pull that off? Like, there's certain parts of this you watch, like, from a technical standpoint. It's like watching one of those Korean, like, thriller movies. You're like, how? Like, let me just step up for a minute. Like, how did you do this with cameras and people? Like, how is this possible? It's like, there's parts of this that have that, isn't there? And it's just like, so you have that, and then you have this relatable character, and you have this whole situation. But also, like, this, I kept, you know, Blue Ruin, I think, is, like, the closest thing, because, like, you know, revenge happens. Like, now what? Fuck if I know. I'm not a superhero or a criminal mastermind. Like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
Right.
And, like, then you just, but everything becomes very dangerous. In this guy's situation, you're not going to have somebody, like, villain monologuing forever. They're just going to shoot him.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, like, there's not a, you know, there's not, like, that time to go, like, well, then our master plan was blah, 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 blah. It's just like,
we're not so different, you and I.
Yeah, we're not going to have that. It's not, that's
everything
not the
you ever told me, like, was a lie.
Like, everybody involved in the situation, like, are legitimately dangerous and, like, legitimately lethal.
It's really just varying levels of competency. You know what I mean? Like, it's not that they're not movie dumb where, like, they want a monologue, but it's just like I forget the name of the bleach blonde guy that is kind of the cause of the whole thing with his sister. But, like, that character, perfectly willing to kill people. He's just bad at it, and that allows for our guy to have a couple lucky escapes. But it's not because the guy makes a dumb mistake. It's just he's about as good at shooting and killing people as I would be, which is to say.
And I feel like he is just a tiny bit reluctant, and that tiny bit of hesitation.
You can tell it bothers
every
him.
Every single time, yeah.
Yeah, I think so they were hoping to do the whole thing bloodlessly and just get the fuck out of town.
Well, that was I think that's the bottom line, is that ultimately it's like both he and his sister, both, I think, independently and probably together, realize that, like, this has a shelf life. Like, there's not,
yeah.
Once you become expendable, you're expendable.
And that dude they're working for is wicked bad.
Yeah, like, just, and so you just know that there's a shelf life. That's what it is. And so, yeah. Like, so that adds, I thought that was such a great choice among the many great choices they made in this, where it really kind of, I wouldn't 100% say that he and the sister are, like, epic levels of sympathetic and are kind of heroes, like, not like that, but it's more like it does kind of round it out in a way that you don't necessarily see 100% of the time. Usually it's like, oh, someone's been shot or stabbed or whatever, and they're laying there going, blurble, 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 you know, mea culpa, blurble, blurble, death. And, like, in this situation, like, just from the onset, it's kind of like, well, I mean, you can, once the first time you get the boss guy, you're like, well, yeah, this is...
As a bad dude.
But what I do, I like about him that we find out he is just as fucked as everyone else.
Yeah.
Because the 2 million, so they've stolen, what, $4 million, something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
That was hidden in the boxing bag, like a heavy bag of a neo-Nazi who, or just, you know, good old fashioned Nazi, I guess. Who was going to then, they were going to pick up the money and take it to the Hungarians. However, the brother and sister kind of conspired to steal the money, leaving Locksmith to deal with Nazi and just fight for his goddamn life in a very fun way.
I interrupt you just momentarily. The sentence, leave the Locksmith to deal with a Nazi, unquote.
It feels like an aphorism, you know, like, we just, you know, we got to do here, guys. We got to leave the Locksmith to deal with a Nazi, you know, that's.
It's just like your turn of phrase was just so perfect. Yeah.
That's up there with, like, leave the gun, take the cannoli.
Yeah, it's just like.
By the way, apropos of not much, can I share with you the new kind of idiom that my mother accidentally gave me?
Please do.
On their recent visit. She was talking about how my dad never leaves his phone on vibrate and always has the ringer on so that he can hear when things come in. And she says, but his ears are just too far from his pockets. And I thought, that is such a great, like, you're getting too big for your britches kind of
your
thing.
Your eyes are too big for your stomach.
Yeah, or like your ego's writing checks, your ass can't cash. That's like, good. Hold on, buddy. I think your ears are a little too far from your pockets.
You're not listening to what I'm saying.
Oh, that's awesome.
You're not listening to the money talk, son.
Oh, Deborah. No, Deborah. Deborah Knight, the that's wonderful wordsmith. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I like that.
I'm going to have to figure out
this
what
poor kid, like... I also like that at no point does his ears really get too far from his pockets, or he's not trying to win the whole situation and get away with the money or anything. He can never think that far ahead.
He truly just wants to survive.
Yeah. It's just like get through moment by moment. And several times he ends up tied up and surrounded by bad guys.
Yeah.
And I think the genius of this is that it just keeps finding ways for him to just barely slither out so that he can get caught in the next thing.
Yeah, well, I do not think even it, in like a hyper clever way either. Like he's not like a super spy. It's just survival, basically.
Yeah, it's just like what do I have? A lot of scrambling and
ugly escapes. Yeah.
There's not even a real big moment where him being a locksmith comes into play.
Yeah, there's just like picking the bathroom lock is kind of it.
Yeah.
Or I guess the handcuffs in the bathroom, but.
Well, and also the setup of this too, like you often will say that, you know, oftentimes in movies and in media and in real life that like, you know, the just the wrong place, the wrong time kind of situation. But it also, it can't just be that because then it becomes too clever or too cute. Mm. What I love is the setup of this with the lady with the apartment, whatever, is that he kind of goes through his rigmarole because he's got he's an independent contractor, he's got a license, all that kind of stuff. And like, yeah, he goes through the whole rigmarole, but then social engineering comes into play and social, you know, whatever. And it's like, I've got to follow the rules, but I don't want to seem like a Poindexter, like it just, I don't, it's like my shirt's tucked in my underpants, kind of like I'm going to enforce the rules, but I'm going to be like, okay, just, we'll just do this. And then you can show me that. And they get in there and he's like, okay, I need to see the thing. And she's like, oh yeah, I'll get the thing. And he's like, then they start talking for a minute. And he just, you know, it's like, he's still trying to like do this, but like the social pressure of the situation, it's like,
it's kind of the fairy tale logic of like, you have to break the rules to cause the pain to be brought down on you, and he ignores like three huge red flags because she's kind of cute and sort of nice to him, and then he gets punished for it for the rest of the night. It's a very morality play type situation.
And that's one of the things that I found so genius is that I think if it was just like it was just you get thrust into this crazy thriller, chase him, shoot him up kind of messy thing, I think that's fine. But it's like, to put him into that situation, but Josh, you pointed out, like, he's not trying to enrich himself from the onset. He wasn't like, oh, I see an opportunity to do whatever. It's more just sort of like, it's like, oh, danger. Danger is not any good. Like, I would prefer to keep breathing. And, like, that's what motivates, you know, and he also doesn't have that's another thing I love about this. Like, there are some basic humanity things that happen in the third act, but he doesn't end up becoming, like, John McClane of like, we've got to get everybody out. We got to save the hostages. We have to do this or else. He's like, yeah, I mean, it sucks, but like, I don't really have the need to be a big old damn hero about everything. And it's like, I love that because it's such an easy thing. Maybe it's more of a Western thing, I guess, but it's like, that's just like the automatic of being like, well, I have to, you know, save the people and do the thing, or I have to, you know, whatever. And it's like,
as a protagonist, you know, compared to a lot of the movies we watch that do have people having to, like, you know, dig down deep and confront evil at the end of a movie, like, this dude has a very realistic fear of death.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we can tell he's a good dude. He doesn't want anyone to get hurt to save his life, but he is so scared of dying that he will still do things that actually probably compromise him pretty heavily and make him feel terrible, because it is that scary to think of dying. And so you kind of believe him when he does something a little shitty. It's like, yeah, that dude's fucking terrified. This is literally the scariest thing that's ever happened to him and ever will. And it manages to let him nudge the plot along a couple times by doing something that isn't typically a protagonist or a hero move without losing sympathy for him, because he is so pushed out of his comfort zone. I think that was a very smart choice.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that,
And I think most of my animus just is still aimed at the girl and her brother, because I never lost track of the fact that she made all of this happen to him. So if the couple of moments when he kind of loses his way and is vindictive or whatever, like, that plays for me okay, because I feel like there has to be something for him to go like, look what you did to me.
Yeah.
I'm going to hit your hand with a hammer and then I'm going to feel real bad about it, you know?
Yeah, I think that's smart. That's like the other side of that coin, is that like, she also is culpable. So you don't have to 100% hope for her to get away scot-free.
So that was one thing that Jess and I ended up talking about, because the ending of it really bothered her.
Huh.
And she was, it was because the idea of, like, not only is he basically sacrificing himself, you know, he probably gets away okay at the end of it, but definitely putting himself in more danger so that she can get away. And she felt like the girl didn't deserve that, and that it sucked that he felt obligated to do that. And then it got wrapped up a little bit in how this is taking place during a Black Lives Matter.
I thought that was brilliant.
And you have the guy, our guy, not really wanting to be part of the movement because he has his own shit going on. And then he kind of accidentally ends up part of it. And like, so we're like, do we like having that in there? Does it feel like it's integral, or does it feel like window dressing? And then, like, how do we feel about this guy just kind of fucking himself over so that she can get away? Right. Yeah. What she said was like, I don't like to see a young Black man throw his life away for a white girl who totally fucked him over. I was like, yeah, I can see that. It didn't stop me as cold, but I can definitely see that as an approach.
Well, I think it is kind of asking too, though, right? Like, do we help people because they deserve it, or do we help people because they need help? Mm-hmm. And he seems to be of the latter. And I think, like, he's fighting against that instinct sometimes, but I think that is who he is, right?
Yeah, it's like, do we help people because of who they are or because of who we are?
Yeah. Well, I think that's the big question. And on top of that, I would say, even though they don't do any kind of gimmicky, bullshitty, you know, like, kind of love on a battlefield type of nonsense, I also think that if he's faced with that choice in the first act, it's a no. Mm-hmm. And then he's faced the choice in the third act, I think he gets some contextual data from brother and from crime boss guy that, like, if all he did was just turn a hail a cab and say, fuck it, I'm heading to France, like, you know, he will have caused the death of these people. Now, are they innocent? No, not necessarily, because especially brother, like, brother basically says, like, I don't care if this fucker dies, like, I don't want to die, mm-hmm. so therefore he's okay, you know, I'm okay if he dies. And it's like, our guy, he's kind of like, you know, I don't want to die, but I don't want to be the cause of it either. And whereas, like, brother basically is like, even though the motivations in a vacuum are like, you know, okay, I get it. It's kind of like, there's a difference between those two things. And it's sort of like, and so it's, our guy seems to recognize the bigger humanity component of it. And so it's kind of like, I think that decision happens in the third act, doesn't happen in the first. If it happens, and if it was like all the events of the movie were only in the first act, and that's the thing that happens, it'd be like, that's kind of obnoxious. You know, but so like, and then and how that the protesting and that part of it adds to everything, like adds to every part of, like, just in terms of logistics, in terms of getting around, in terms of misinformation and all this kinds of stuff, like all these things that are occurring, like all simultaneously. It's like, man, again, first time director, like, for fuck's sake,
that is amazing.
Yeah, it's very sure footed. It's crazy.
Yeah. Did anybody else get the slightly shameful Harold and Kumar go to White Castle moment when they're all like thrown down on the ground and the two other dudes are very cheerful about it? It's like, don't worry, the arc of history bends toward justice. Bye.
What I love, and also what I love about this is the same, for a lot of the same reasons why I love Blue Ruin so much, is like the average person doesn't necessarily know, and it can be done for like comedic effect too, like, you know, like in the, was it like in like, is it Office Space, you know, like, oh, they have to launder the money. Like, how do you launder the money? Like, do we know anybody who can launder money? How do you launder money? Like, yeah. Like, it was that. And like, we played the silly effect, or like, you know, Game Night with Jason Bateman and Rachel McAdams, and how wonderful that one is. Where somebody will have a thought, and then they're like, well, I don't know who do I call for a gun? I don't know what I'm supposed to do, like, in this thing or whatever. And it's like, and this has that feel, but in a much more serious way, of like, I recognize that there's this, but like, how or what do I?
Yeah, I mean, this guy would have seen all the same movies we have and seen how they handle that in a movie, and then he would instantly realize none of that shit happens in real life.
Well, that was the thing that the scene in the apartment. I don't know about you guys, but that was one of those things. Like, you know, I'm already on edge because there's that social pressure of what's happening when she gets him into the apartment, and you're like, you're in the back of the line, she's going, buddy, don't, come on, man, don't do that. And like, you know, you just get a little bit of a, maybe not overt death or overt threat, but it's like, this feels a little bit more. Then it's just sort of like, and fuck you over and bye. And it's like, and that's pretty despicable given that she knows the nature of these people. But like, he's hiding under the thing, and the guy's in the thing, and it's like pretty tense. And then you're just kind of like, and whether it's big action movies or watching television programs or whatever, but like, we get used to a certain level of like fights, or just like, psh, pah, choo, phew. And this is more like, no, it's like cuts on arms and like banging into things and like throat being grabbed and like being thrown into shit and like that hurting. And like, you know, the first thing he gets thrown into the ground, like by the couch or whatever, it's like you see him like pinch really hard on his back. It's just like, he's a young guy, but it's like, yeah, because that fucking hurts. Yeah. It's painful. And it's sort of, and so like that fight sequence, just from that point forward, you're like, this movie wants to make sure that you know that at any point, like, death is the thing. Like, you know, this is serious mortal danger. And like, you know, this is not just sort of like, it'll be a fun whiz bang good time. This is like, this is serious crap. Like, this is serious stuff. And it's sort of like, you know, there's no continues. There's no, you know, power ups. Like, this is just kind of like, yeah, you just kind of go. And, you know, the thing where they're in the little storage room and that whole bit and like the what he's being pushed to, I really like that, because I get tired of sometimes in things like this where the concept of mortality, the concept of death, the concept of moral threat doesn't seem to faze people like in any way. Mm-hmm. Like, it just kind of like, it's kind of like, I'll step over the dead body and grab a coffee. Like, motherfucker, you're an accountant. Like, you adjusted real fast. And this, like, I like that level. I like his level of franticness, because that seems normal to me for a normal human to, like, in a very, very heightened, scary situation.
Yeah, it's not ugly and sloppy and...
Yeah, it's like there's no clean edges. And so from a narrative standpoint, I really, really appreciate and admire that they really prioritize that like so well. And then just how this thing is made, too, like just the way it's edited and filmed and just across the board. It's like,
golly. Yeah, I was looking at the screenshots on IMDb and just stills from the movie. Every single one of them looks like a painting.
Yeah,
it is freaking gorgeous the way that this thing is shot. Like, should not, I don't know where it gets off looking this good, especially from a first time director, but it certainly does.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. It's just like, it was just one of those things. I just remember walking out. I love that feeling, like with festivals, when we kind of walk out of and seeing like, just, you know, just walking out of something and just being just blown to bits, like just, you know, Green Room was that way, where, you know, it's like, and I know we have varying opinions, but like, you know, Babadook felt that way at Stanley, and think just like that feeling of walking out and just being like, whoa, man, that was, whew, man, that was quite the thing, and I love that feeling of just something kind of incredible about that. Like, the other one. Who's the other one this last year? I don't really, of course, I love Heretic quite a bit. And then it was the year previous, and it's still not available in the States, which pisses me off to no end. But Alex de Iglesias won Four is a Crowd, which it's still not available in the States as far as I can tell. But I was searching for it like a week ago. And it's, you know, not a horror movie, not a thriller movie, but it's a Preston Sturges comedy of errors, oh, for God's sake, type situation. It just keeps getting more and more silly and crazy and just bonkers, but also super heartfelt and very sincere. It has a lot to say about self-image and about self-caring for yourself and then, like, how you see the world and how the world sees you. And it's a fucking fantastic movie. And it's just, why is it not available in the States? It's ridiculous. But I remember walking out with that one. Like, just, I was like, damn, man. Like, that was a hell of an experience. So, yeah, it's an amazing feeling. And this one, like I said, last year for Fantastic Fest, like, this was just, yeah, I just walked out and just be like, whoa, like, man, that was amazing. And it's like, anytime anybody's like, what have you seen that you really liked? Like, it was just like, always, like, you get, whatever the next time is for Nightcall, you gotta go. Like, you have to. And I love that feeling. I love that feeling.
Yeah, I think it has, it gave me the same rush that like a Pulp Fiction or a Reservoir Dogs did when I was young. But to get that rush now, it needs to be like that propulsive and stylish, but then it's got to have something to think about.
Yeah.
And this had me chewing on it after it was done. Like, how did this guy end up like this? This had a more realistic ending than I was expecting for something that had that a little bit of stylized nature to it. So having that bit of the bit of substance, like bit of something to chew on, I thought was really added to the experience.
Weirdly, the like frenetic kind of sense of never quite knowing which direction is up while watching this, the movie it first reminded me of was Go.
Mm. Yeah.
Just being like a bunch of people. Go is
kind of Tarantino light.
Oh, certainly. Right? It's definitely lighter. You know, it's got its kind of tense moments, but like overall, that's just meant to be like a wacky, crazy thing. But it is just like every scene is in a different location with people that are unfamiliar with the location and each other usually. And I was like, God, this is just fun. I love this kind of movie. So it's that's yeah, I guess, you know, if Go had a something that you could mull over with your spouse afterwards. Mm-hmm. I don't think that one really did. It's been a while, but yeah.
I love Go though.
Well, and it's also that spectrum of things too. Like, what's the tone you're really wanting? Like, do you want a clenched butt? Or do you want like a more like a whiz bang fun time? Because like there's all, you know, there's like a spectrum of them. Like I was thinking like, well, yeah, Goes is a great example. And I was thinking like, is it like Maria Full of Grace was the one about the trafficking lady? And like, and Veronica, I think the French one, where it's all one take, like the drug thing. And then she's like the run basically. There's another one like that. But and like, so it's just a spectrum of like, is it we're looking for more like fun? Like more like tense fun, or just like, oh, the brutality of humanity.
So it's Go on one end and Irreversible on the other.
Jesus.
That's really like fuck yeah or oh fuck.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Excellent.
Awesome. So, well, I'm glad you guys liked it. I was very, yeah, I know it's just not our typical thing, but I just really love this movie a lot.
Yeah, it's got the tangy zip of you know, a miracle whip, I suppose. I think it's indicative of the whole story is when he is surrounded by the bad guys, he manages to outmaneuver them, get to his car, get the car turned on, and go like 2 feet.
God, that was funny.
Before it stops, and then he just gets dragged out again. I'm like, Jesus.
That's like the moment that has
but
yeah.
Like,
that is the moment that like cements for him, I am not John McClane. Like,
yeah,
things do not work out in real life.
And in the like the brothel house too, where he's going through the brothel house.
The brothel house, yes.
If the brothel house closes, you know it's a serious story. God.
The brothel house index, got it.
God's sake. But like when he's trying to escape, and what you expect, because we've seen a lot of movies, all three of us have seen tons of movies, we see chase movies and thriller movies, and when somebody runs through a thing, they go the dodgy, dodgy, shifty, shifty. Dodgy, dodgy, shifty, shifty. And he's like bangy, smacky, slippy. And it's like, yeah, because that's what it would be. Not the... Yeah. Everything's perfectly choreographed, you know, like a dance sequence, which I mean can be fun. It's can be awesome. But like,
well, for God's sake, I stubbed my toe on the coffee table going to work. Like,
yeah. And it's like, it doesn't put in a place that you have been prior to that day. And so like that scene where he's trying to get out through the bathroom and that stuff like that, I think that's in the fight sequence, all those different bits just really underscore that kind of reality, but not in a bummer way, but just reality in like a, we can add a different level of danger in the fact that you're not a movie character. You're not a superhero. You're not a whatever. It's like, and there's something really cool about that. And it's just a neat way, an ambitious way that I don't know if everybody would have the stones to, you know, try to pull that off in a way that works. And it's like, and I really appreciate that was a big part of this without bringing in some big over emotional story. Like, well, his half brother is, you know, blind, deaf, dumb, no legs, no arms, and is trying to get into Oxford or whatever. And you're like, okay, and why the hell do I care?
He's lying on the front step, and his name is Matt. And
yes. So, yeah.
We should rate this, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, for this one, I would say it was a 9 out of 10 for me. Like, this is...
Hell yeah.
Pretty fan-freaking-tastic.
Yep, this was a ton of fun for all the reasons listed. I recommended it immediately upon finishing it to the roommates. I don't know if they watched it yet. They're out of town. But yeah, 8 out of 10 for me. I think just a titch lower, but not for lack of love. And yeah, go see this one.
Yeah, I love this. So I'll be the high man on the totem pole here. Last year for Fantastic Fest, like basically it was like a five-way tie because I keep a spreadsheet because I can't remember anything. And so I basically had Saturday Night, Different Man, Wild Robot, Nightcrawler, Heretic all at 9.5.
Wow.
And so like, and I couldn't, you know, wouldn't necessarily be able to pick one of those because they're very different movies.
Yeah, no shit.
but like love them for very different reasons. But like, you know, and so, and I just, and it's weird to compare, you know, like thriller, because I mean, Koreans just do thrillers like nobody's fucking business. But it's a certain style of thriller. And then like, you know, a lot of the Eastern European ones and then some of that kind of stuff. So it just kind of depends on who's making them kind of by their own standard. But just this as it stood didn't get into like the heavy emotional things and just strip down those things, but not in a way that then you become bored because it's just like watching a moving painting. Like they just prioritize things in a different way. And so I just, if I could bottle that feeling of walking out of a theater, having that experience and just like, I fucking love that feeling. So yeah. So I'll say 9 out of 10, Ruin Adjacion.
Sacre bleu ruin.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sacre bleu cheese.
Yes. You can take that sack of blue cheese and put it in the trash can.
Sacre my balls. Anyway. we'll take a minute. We'll take a quick break here, and then we'll come back and talk about our other things. So next up, we want to talk about the Grapes of Death, or Les Raisins de Mort, or Las Uvas de la Muerte. Spanish wins again. When you hear that this is a movie about tainted wine that turns people into zombies, you might imagine that there's going to be like a big wine festival where tons of people are going to be turned into zombies and it's going to be just mayhem. That you would be mistaken, because this is a very low budget movie. They have budget for train tickets and tit shots, and that's all they got. So most of our journey is getting to the place where the tainted wine comes from, and then kind of mucking about in the deserted town and being slightly menaced by zombies. This shit is fascinating.
Yeah.
I do think after the second death scene, my wife and I decided to call it Die With Your Tits Out.
See, like, I'd heard that, or I guess read that text from you before I watched it.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as it happened, I was like, ah, because of this death. And then I went, nope, they were right. It's every woman in this movie gets naked before she dies. It's astonishing.
Well, the first one, it's her father, too. And you're like, man.
Yeah, that whole thing was very weird, because I assumed that was like husband and creepily young wife. So I guess better that it's not. But then that whole thing is even weirder. It's very it did a great job of making me uncomfortable and like squicked out. But I don't know that that was what they were going for.
Yeah, like that wasn't the reason why we wanted you to feel like you needed to shower after this movie. Like, right. Come on. So we have like we start with girl on a train headed to visit her fiance who works at the winery, right? And we have some like lovely back and forth with friend on the train. Friend gets her tits out and then gets killed by a zombie, and we're just kind of off to the races. Like, I don't mean to be crude when I say, but I feel like this movie does have a mission statement.
This is definitely of that era of film. Yeah.
Well, and it's also like, what's you know, it's what are you? We got a text of that, Josh. Crack me up, because like, I don't know how many more any more of Jean Roland's movies you've seen, but like, most of his movies, well, most of them are, I would say the not majority, but like a good chunk of them are all like vampire ones, and like they all basically
monsters.
But it's like I would say I don't know how many of his movies are vampire ones, but they all are so similar. Like, I mean, like the nude vampire and what's the fucking other one? The Requiem for Vampire. And then I
can't remember. Yeah, there was like 12 of them. They all just got added to Shudder, right?
Yeah, there's and like yeah. You know, if you want to have like just if you want to have fun, is like, depends on which one it is. Like
Requiem for Vampire is fun. Would you say it's a hoot, or perhaps two of them?
A few of them are hoots. A few of them are just laborious. But that's the same thing as the Italian Giallo movies. Like, you know, like for every one really fun one, you know, like was it like The Church? Yeah, like you'll have another like eight of them that are just endless and just sort of annoying and mean to women generally, especially if they're the Italian ones. And sort of like, you know, they're not very much fun. It's great that they exist, but like, whatever. And like, I think John Roland's films are kind of that way too. Because like, I haven't seen everything he's ever made, but a lot of them, like you could intermix a lot of the vampire ones together because they're kind of one and the same. And so it was kind of fascinating that these are more like ghoulish sort of things that it's kind of like zombie-esque sort of.
This film,
you don't
like...
get all the sexy vampire. Vampires being sexy with the big velvet capes kind of vibe. But it's like, so like even the one lady, the lady gets with the pitchfork. It's sort of like she's got all the, you know, great zombie disease on her all over the place, but we certainly can't let her have her shirt on.
No.
This feels though, like the calling it a zombie movie, I think sets the wrong expectation for how these things act. Cause like, this feels like someone explained zombies to this dude, but this dude that made this film only speaks French and the person who explained it only spoke English, you know, and they kind of got the gist and they're like, yes, dead people, they kill, gotcha. But they're like, they seem fully cognizant but willing to listen to blonde lady.
Yeah.
And like they can reason to a degree, like they're, and they just seem to have, you know, they just, it's essentially you get like a really bad skin rash type thing as the thing takes over. So like some people are just wearing heavy eyeshadow.
Yeah.
And other people have like, you know, the Evil Dead era just drawn on thick black veins with like a crayon. Mm. And then some people are fully gooped out with like some gunk all over their face.
And they actually get some appliances. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just kind of, it's so all over the place. Like the first zombie that we see transform, the guy on the train, I kind of dug the weird thing when they knock him down and he starts bleeding through his cheek and it looks like it's each drop is coming out of like a shower head.
That was this, like, gross. Yeah,
it really, really is. Cause then I'm like, oh, this
say
hits
that complimentarily. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like that, like, what is it called? That trypophobia, whatever, the fear of like tons of little holes. And I was like, oh man, like I doubt that's intentional, but like that hits that button, I think. And it's just like, that's so fascinating and weird. And then you have like 20 minutes of relatively inept story and acting and stuff before the next like insanely cool weird thing happens. So actually I enjoyed this, and partly I think because it is just so fascinatingly weird. It's like when you see an animal you've never seen before at the zoo.
Yeah, like I enjoyed it, but probably not for many of the reasons that the filmmaker wanted me to enjoy it.
Right.
Or just like, oh, fucking hell, this is really... And it is more of like a sneaking around trying to avoid the zombies. But when they all get together, they just kind of hang out in a group. Yep. They're more like, they're kind of like hooligans, you know, or maybe like very mild versions of the sadness zombies.
Yeah.
Like we are kind of sadistic and cruel, but
we're not going to get all bent out of shape about it, though.
Yeah. Like also, you know, live and let live, whatever. And we get the two other like whole like hale and hearty dudes who join our party have more of a sketchiness about them at times than the zombies do, which I think is fascinating.
Yeah. And those guys, unlike our protagonist from Night Call, perfectly comfortable with the idea that, well, I can't see any zombies right this second. Let's have dinner.
Yeah.
Like, the dead have come back to life and are killing the living. You've been on the run shooting things. You walked into a thing and shut the door behind you and went, well, let's pour the wine. Like, problem solved. If it's not in front of me, like, they have no object permanence. Like,
for as French as they are, there's a very kind of like no upper class permanence. British kind of thing where it's like, well, no, we've just been out hunting and now we're having tea because like, that's what one does.
If we're not putting aside tea for this, trifle, blah, blah.
Well, it's so fascinating too. Like, there's that one shot of all of them, like a whole bunch of them, you know. Like, but it is, you know, it is exceedingly French. They're all kind of standing there, like, we? And it's like,
brains, I suppose we would eat them if you had it, but we don't care.
Well, that's the thing. Like, it has that kind of weird, like you say, you're kind of trying to avoid these sort of ghoul things, but it's like, you know, they're not like active. It's not like Night of the Living Dead type of Romero ones that are kind of, you know, always coming for you. There's a little bit of like a kind of looking around, being like, just kind of taking it in. Mm-hmm. So it kind of changes the dynamic. So where the people part of it becomes more of a thing than you would really expect, which is such a strange thing to do in a thing like this. What you'd expect is just rampaging things, and then you stop all the rampaging things, and then we're done. And it's like, no. We're gonna get all this like weird subtext with the kind of like dynamics of like, is this lady like a monster queen person, or is it like a mind control thing, or is it like
it's kind of a Queen of the Vampires thing, right?
Like, yeah, that's yeah.
But like, they're not vampires. Like, I don't know. I should say my favorite funny, surely unintentionally funny moment from this is when our protagonist gets to the farm with dad and daughter that dad pitchforks to death. Mm-hmm. And she's like, please help. You need to call the police. And he goes, we don't have a phone. And she goes, well, about that one right there. And the guy's like, it doesn't work. And then she goes, oh, well, then give me a ride to the town. We don't have a car. There's a truck out front, though. He's like, it doesn't work. It's like watching a 4-year-old lie to their parent. It's just so dumb. Oh,
like, oh, that car. Well, that's not.
Oh, that, you meant that one. That's not. That's our Tuesday car, and it's Sunday.
I also really love that they just their dogged insistence on the plot device of the jacked up grapes, where like. Because, like, at the beginning, you know, with the credits, you have, like, the guys with those goofy-ass face masks and, like, the tractors and the things. We're like, what is this movie exactly, I wonder? It's kind of like, and then you kind of, like, off to the races, where it's, like, a kind of a combination of sort of, like, Day of the Dead and, like, the stuff. Kind of, like, in a way, sort of.
I really enjoyed the guy pulling back the trapdoor to the wine vat. The subterranean wine vat and just dipping his hand in it.
Yeah, splash, 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 splash. Okay, buddy.
Like, I guess maybe the alcohol would kill whatever was on his hand, but good.
Presumably. God. Like, how's the port? Congealed. Like,
there's what? There's gotta be some sense of humor in this, right? Like, this had to have been intentional on some level.
Maybe the whole joke is that wine could just be bad, and like in France, like, oh, that's crazy.
But the whole thing with the working in just the clouds of the bullshit at the beginning, and then the guy says, "Don't worry, the masks are coming in 2 days or something like that."
That made me laugh.
But you have to keep You have to keep working, right? But the masks will be here soon, and then it won't suck this bad.
Well, it's like when you see those photos from like the 50s with kids running behind the truck fogging with DDT.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And you're just like, ah, yes. good. This explains some things.
Yeah, you so, had yeah, no Joni Mitchell.
It seems point, like that first bit has to be kind of a joke. Perhaps not a kind a very one. Maybe it's supposed to make fun of the laborers, but yeah, I don't know.
It's making a deep environmental statement. Whole movie is really, it's basically Silent Spring.
God, that's good. Yes. Rachel Carson can go drown herself in a pond.
Stand up coming out strong against Rachel Carson today.
I happen
to know that Johnny Carson was kind of a piece of shit too, so just the surname. I love that there should be a podcast where people just talk about the books that scarred them in high school and college.
Yeah.
Because I'm still mad at The Lake of the Woods for doing the, like, Lady or the Tiger ending. It's like, did he kill the girl or did he just imagine he killed the girl? And in his adult state, does it really matter? Because war, man. It's like, fuck that shit. Like, if you as the author don't know the answer to that question, then you can't expect your audience to answer it for you. That's a cop-out. And my teacher was not happy with me.
Hmm. Yeah, we had to. Matt, you can play the litmus test for this. Do you remember a book from high school years called A Separate Piece?
No.
Okay, so this reinforces my thought about this. Was that I had this 9,000-year-old English teacher who was a real piece of work, and she loved this book more than anything else. The main character in this book like makes Holden Caulfield look like Fred Rogers. Like he just he's the whiniest, most obnoxious, least relatable, just pain in the ass character. I hated that book so hard, and I just me and this teacher locked horns like crazy. But over the years, I've brought this up with people. I don't like walk around the street like to take a survey, but like it does come up. And universally, nobody knows what this book is. So I'm convinced that stupid Miss Harper loved this stupid book so goddamn much that she forced the school to buy a set for her class, and she's the only goddamn person who taught this book.
It's entirely possible.
I fucking hated it. And then Conlon had one. I was trying to remember, though. I can't remember what it is on top of my head. There was some book from one of his English classes that, like, just like... Yeah, he was a pretty voracious reader and very enthusiastic reader. Or else, he had one teacher and one particular book. I don't remember what it was that just soured him. Like he just was like, it made him so mad. It was like, and part of it was that thing of like, the teacher's approach of the my analysis is the analysis,
yeah,
kind of thing. And it's like, and he just, you know, he is my child, so it's he's like, you know, he's gonna have some difficulty with authority. So, you know, I
butted heads with English teachers too. Now that I think about it, that's interesting.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things. I don't know how any of this relates to the thing, but anyway, it was just one of those things. Like, but you know, I'm gonna sound like an absolute crazy person by saying this. This is a couple. This one and maybe one or two other of Jean Roland's movies. Like, I could see somebody remaking them.
Oh sure, I could see this made in a way that's more comprehensible to modern audiences and has some genuine rural somberness.
I mean, I could see the thing of like taking the class warfare thing in the context of like old world stuff and agrarian, you know, agricultural things mixed with like modern political, you know, labor.
What was that one we just drama did?
Oh yeah.
I can't think of the name of it. Was it the Manor or something like that? I don't shit.
Yeah, the Brazilian one.
Yeah, it's a bunch of like laborers that live on the land and the shitheads. Yeah, like you could absolutely, I think, scale this up to something that has a message and has relatable stakes. Like this would be an ideal remake movie because the movie as it is isn't great, so that's a good reason to remake it instead of like good movies.
Yeah, if it's a local winery in a small town that captures the attention of somebody who posts a thing on Instagram and suddenly is overrun by celebrities, or you know, like maybe not the worst of the influencer stereotypes, but at least like people that you're already a little bit predisposed against. So then you have the kind of local yokels and the modern TikTok kids trying to figure out how to get past the zombie plague.
And see, I was going to go the direction of, you hit it big with like a popular, you know, review from a popular whoever. And then because it's a small town thing, they have to cheat the recipe to scale it up. And that introduces your contaminant. Now this poor town is suffering because of the greed of the winery guy. So you still get the laborers fighting the management. Either of these would be a more competent film than the one we watched. But,
or both at the same
or
time.
Or both. ¿Por qué no los tres?
Yeah. Yeah, you sort of combine, throw a little Motel Hell in there and you've got
there you go. Ah, this is so good. Hell, you know what? Make it a reporter and her crew and we'll make it all found footage.
Oh, good.
You unlocked it, Charlie.
Oh, thank you. What hell? It's the Jeff Goldblum line from Jurassic Park. It's that's one big pile of shit.
Yeah.
But now,
I've got this monkey's paw here for you, Charlie.
Oh shit! Consuela's dead. Did she drink the wine? Like, she might have had some wine, and now she's dead. Like the wine that we're gonna serve tomorrow to everybody.
Then it turns into the mayor from Jaws.
Like, well, we're just going to, it probably wasn't the wine, right? Like, we're just going to stuff Consuela's body in the orchard, you know, cellar, and then we're going to just go about our business, and then she will be the patient zero that gets out of, breaks out of containment.
I like
fuck him up, Consuela. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I love the idea, though, that if Consuela was, like, Dutch.
It was what?
With wooden shoes and
Dutch.
Yeah. Why does she have a wooden sombrero? It's like,
yeah, I mean, I'm I wouldn't say I'm like the most voracious consumer of the John Roland sort of filmography. That said, like, I, you know, even though we, you know, the kind of the get murdered with your jets out thing that you guys came up with, which is very funny, but you know, I will give the French some points for, like, yeah, multiple women get murdered, but it doesn't seem like in a mean and sexist way. Because, like, so many of the Italian ones, it just, I feel, you feel scuzzy. Like, you feel kind of like,
yeah,
kind of feel gross. Like, this doesn't necessarily, like, these are actually characters, you know, versus just, like, some, like, you know, kind of chain-smoking, like, cocktail dress, sort of, like, window dressing that sort of gets beat around for a while and then just sort of, like, just, yeah. Like, it's just, not every Italian horror movie, but, like, that's just sort of, like, a theme. And like, and so watching something like this, like, yeah, that's not the Citizen Kane of movies. But I do appreciate that the female characters are just slightly more than one dimensional. So, like, I will definitely give it that. So, you know, I would say, like, what did you guys do?
I said 5.5. Matt said 5.
Yeah, I was gonna say, okay, so I was gonna say 5.5. Yeah,
that sounds fair.
5.5 out of 10. 5.5 out of 10. It's like, unless it comes from the zombie region of France, you call it a zombie wine. You have to call it a ghoul wine.
Well played.
Beautiful. All right, let's talk about then Ash or La Ceniza. Ash is a science fiction horror movie by Flying Lotus of the Wu-Tang Clan. It's features some really cool looking visuals and a killer soundtrack and a plot sort of about an alien terraforming force that is slowly taking out some astronauts and absorbing their essences into its own. So you kind of get the cop out of the alien just looks like a people. But then you also get some weird tentacly stuff, and you get a ton of bisexual lighting in this, just constant pinks and blues just kind of washing through. So I don't know, like, for me, this was, when I saw it in the theater, it kicked my ass because it is nice and big and loud and very pretty. Watching it again at home, I was like, this is still, like, very pretty and the score is great. And I don't know if anything really holds together here, but it's a spectacle, was how I ended with it.
I felt like this, yeah, it's, this felt all style and no substance, I think, is like the short way to sum it up. Yeah, visually, it's pretty fascinating. It is lit to the gills, and every, there's enough of it going on that, like, they had to have a warning at the front for the strobe effects. Like, there's a lot of crazy light shit happening in this, but the plot reveals itself so slowly with so much weird confusion that I felt like I went longer than was ideal before I felt like I had something to latch onto into this, where I felt then that by the end, it's like, oh, is that kind of all this was? We had all that build up for, yep, it's some aliens kind of attacking us in like a thing/dead space type situation. And that just felt a little deflating. I think with as much confusion and the amnesia trope, I really wanted something genuinely surprising. And I feel like this didn't land that for me.
Although I did like the idea of these creatures terraforming a planet, like just being slightly ahead of us with their terraforming technology. And that being the thing that they stumble upon seemed pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Kind of like Total Recall vibes there. And then I also liked the way that the aliens portrayed once we start hearing from the alien, where we just have these kind of like eyeball blinking balefully between tentacles and kind of machiney voice because it's translating its cold alien thoughts to us. Like, some cool shit in there, I feel like.
Yeah.
Charlie's, well, like, no.
Well, one thing I was thrown out, especially after I just invented a version of Hotel Artemis that doesn't exist. I'm very not sure on my feet. But when you said something about being the Wu-Tang Clan, like, I don't believe that's true.
Oh, I don't know the Wu-Tang Clan well enough to be able to make assertions.
Because, like,
Flying Lotus is not Wu-Tang, I'm dumb.
Yeah, he was West Coast. I think the main thing is because he's a West Coast sort of fellow. Yes. And
I mean, you would know about these things and I would not, you see. I thought he was with that group.
Well, I still want to say it in like a, well, actually, kind of way. But I was like, when you said that, I'm like, my brain was just sort of like, wait, what just happened? I was like, hold on a second. So yeah, not in the, in no crummy way, but I was like, I don't think that was the thing.
Of course.
But I do think of him like early on in career. Like, I think he did some stuff. He did some weirdo shit like on, like a lot of weird collaborations with a lot of people, like for sure. Cause he's a very creative, I would think he's like the Del the Funky Homo Sambien or like Far Side version of like Tyler the Creator. Like he's kind of like a, mm-hmm. you know, kind of like a garage of imagery. Garage band version of Tyler the Creator kind of dude. So, you know, very creative guy, you know, for sure. His last, the one he directed before Kuso, I did not like at all. Mm-hmm. And then he had a segment in one of the VHS ones and I didn't like that either.
That's so, where I know the name from.
And it was like, and so then when they did this one, so like, you know, the cast in this, they've got a good cast. Isaac Gonzalez is, you know, and Aaron Paul and then the guy from the Raid movies and whatever, like a good cast. And like the majority of it does look really cool. Like for sure. It does mm-hmm. look really good. But ultimately, like I had struggled with this one a lot, and this is not like Lotus's problem necessarily, but like there's so much of this that the script just made me fucking insane. Mm. Where I just sort of like, there's so much of like the people, they're coming down the hallway. That's where the people are kind of writing. And I just got to become like a twitchy mess trying to watch this. Cause the dialogue of the writing just made me insane. And because it sounds like bad sci-fi writing is the thing, like that's what, and maybe that's not very fair. Cause I don't have the best ear in the world for sci-fi writing. Like oftentimes it just really can grate on my nerves cause it sounds so dumb, but it's sort of cause it, like, you know, having somebody describe a flux capacitor, kind of like that kind of stuff just sort of gets on my nerves very quickly. But it's sort of like, so maybe that's part of it, but it's just, there's a lot of the stuff where Aaron, Paul, and her are yelling at each other for 10 minutes straight. And I just kind of like, oh my God almighty. Like, it just, I feel like we made the same point 9 times in a row. And it's like, any forward momentum. So like, but it does look really cool. Like creatively speaking, it's really neat looking. And like, and also just that idea of like the thing, sort of an idea of like who's really the thing or what's, who's really got the spirit in them, I guess.
I thought of it like, as the worm from Jason Goes to Hell.
Ah, there you go. Well, you would be the first, I'm sure. there's some cool ideas going on there for sure, but there was a lot of the writing that just really made my head hurt, especially when they had all the crew there. Like, it was like, it felt like it was like you got some AI function system super drunk and then like fed it lines from other stuff to see what it would come up with. And it was like, just these very, I don't know, it's weird. Like, I don't want to be so shitty about it, but like that, the writing just made me absolutely nuts.
Hmm.
Even though I thought it looked really terrific. I mean, it really had a great look to it. I loved all the devices. I liked all the tech. Like, there's like a lot of really cool look of things, you know?
Yeah, those biomechanical suits that have the like phosphorescent jellyfish in them were very, very cool looking.
Well, mm-hmm. and also a lot of the tech that they just seemed to come up with, like they were not just like, it doesn't look like a Star Trek or like a whatever sort of knockoff. There's some of the tech, some of the surgeon robot thing, and then like that like arm Kennedy bit, and like those are cool stuff. It's like really well designed, like very well thought through. It's really
neat. Yeah. I did, in my Letterboxd review, I coined the term auto-surgerator for that thing, because I realized I just called it that, like, unironically and without thinking. Then I went, that's clearly not what it, in fact, no one knows what that's called. I don't think they ever call it anything. Like, fuck, why do I think it's called that? And I was like, all right, that's mine now.
Just how Japanese it is as a artifact.
Yes.
Like a cute anime surgeon, but then what it does is just absolutely relentless.
With just no anesthesia. But it plays the cute song like our rice cooker.
Yeah. I do think you can see all of the sources from this. And it doesn't, like, in a way, every, especially in like sci-fi or horror, everything is built of pieces of everything else, right? But this one very much seems like, okay, so we're going to take the auto surgeon from Prometheus and filter it through the Blade Runner aesthetic. Mm-hmm. And then we got that. And we're going to do like combine kind of the Thing and the alien crew dynamic for those like working class people who are
just blue collar people giving each other shit. Yeah.
So like the pieces of this are very visibly, like their origins are very visible, I feel like. Not to say that that makes it bad, but it does make it so that you can't give it as many points for creativity, and it's more just like, this is a cool kind of homage style-y thing, you know?
Yeah, this just sort of, it gave me like the vibe of like a sci-fi channel movie or a canon film or something like that, or you know, like when people do the like, or like a video game adaptation that's like not given enough money or treated seriously, you know, like a Blood Rain or some shit where you're like, okay, you did as well as you could with what you had like going, which is in this case like basically one location of a few rooms with some other stuff done on like green screen or whatever, and like they're doing the best you can with that situation, and I think that's where the visual style makes up for some of it for this movie. Mm-hmm. But then I think the rest of it is, you can sort of see the seams as you're watching it.
There were parts of it that I found really harrowing though. I think it does a decent job of, at least for me, making me actively fear for the lady's safety, especially once she's outside of the thing and making her walk to the orbital. And then I think more than anything, I just really like that last shot of the orbital just covered in tentacles, like Castle in the Sky is covered in tree. Mm-hmm. Like that was some good shit. That was a great visual to end on. And that probably has me feeling better about the whole movie than I would have otherwise. Yeah. But yeah, I think I am the one who enjoyed this the most, but I also don't have a hell of a lot to say about it. After watching it, the first time I thought that was neat, but they shouldn't have put it in a theater because it's too small, even for how cool it looks. It's too small of a story, right? Like, it doesn't feel cinematic until you get those couple shots where she's standing outside staring into like the fractal in the sky. Like, and then you go, ooh, very nice. But then it's like, we're back in this very small story. And maybe if I had seen it first on a small screen, I would feel a little differently about that.
Yeah, I could see the visuals being selling it a lot harder on a big screen with massive sound and all that, too. Mm-hmm.
I also just, I'm going to have to look into some more of his music because I really dug that soundtrack.
Nice.
Yeah, that was, I would 10,000% agree. Like, that is one of the areas that I think when you get somebody who's got a really, really, really good music brain, but, and they probably had some people producing this or working on this that were good guides and had some experience where you can hone in somebody who's got a really good music brain and how to apply it, how to utilize that, and so you kind of get a leg up in that way. You're like, whoa, wow, we really know what we're doing. And so yeah, I would 100% agree. Like, I thought the music was really kind of cool, and I think added to some of the harrowing kind of moments to definitely agree with that. Like, it's the use of that, the sound, kind of the mix in general, and how they applied it was quite cool. And I was like, and because oftentimes that is that you know, not for nothing, but that is the part that they kind of screw up pretty consistently.
You like the sound and the sound mix?
Yeah, like it's just, especially for like sci-fi and fantasy type of things where it's sort of like, you know, somebody's clanking along in some armor, and it looks like they're wearing, sounds like they're wearing sneakers, you know, that kind of stuff, and or like in sci-fi things where there's just like, you know, this should have an echo to the sound, or like the music should heighten up things, whatever else, and they're very much focused on the the sci-fi or the fantasy story or whatever, and those type of things go by the wayside, which kind of takes you out of it even more. So I think he did a really good job of bringing in the music part of it, because like I said, you know, probably because he's got a good musical brain. And like I said, I do wish I enjoyed this more. I would say, like, it's kind of feel not that guilty about that, because I'm like, oh damn it, but I don't know.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I just wish my ears were better trained for sci-fi and fantasy speak, because my ears just are very impatient, and they just feel like I don't want to hear the same 9 things being said over and over again. Like, stop. Just, I don't know, I just get super, super impatient, which I think is kind of silly, but, you know, that's what it is. I can't watch it any other way.
I always forget that you're not, like, sci-fi is not at all your nerddom, because, like, the dialogue in like Star Trek, I love it, even though it's just nonsense. And in Doctor Who as well, where, you know, you have to reverse the polarity of the infundibulator before all that. Like, of course you do. Like, why not? Like, or, yeah, we'll open up the hatches and we'll vent our chloron particles, and that will be like doing a donut in a car, and it will throw the space rock into the space hole. And like, yeah. Why not? So that didn't stop me much with this one. Yeah. I guess like I keep talking back and forth about it because I liked it probably more than it needs to be liked. And I guess like as it for me it's in the like small gem category. It's like this is somebody's very much their vision, and it's very modest in its resources, but still had some, showed me some things that I had never seen before. I think it's brilliant also when you have a low budget to make the aesthetic be like everything looks kind of cheap and prefab because it had to be brought here on a like a spaceship, right? Mm. And we're on a planet that has swirling clouds of dust and ash and a trippy colored sky, so that way,
like a Winamp visualizer, yeah, like
everything is gonna have a filter on it, right? So we don't have to worry about whether our like lighting matches from room to room.
Yeah,
so all of that, like the choices they made about the aesthetic made it like lo-fi instead of low budget looking, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it is an important, I mean it is a pretty important difference.
Yeah, it's not like they didn't, it's not just that they didn't have the money, it's that they made a look that made that look cool, I guess.
Yeah, right on.
So, get it. I like seeing stuff like this. I like somebody creative just kind of taking a swing at a thing. And I think that this comes together almost. So, for me, it was like a 7.5 out of 10.
Nice.
Yeah,
I was less enthused. I think, like, for me, this would be the kind of thing, because it does look really rad, that, like, if I were ever the type of person to throw parties again where you have, like, music playing and you can just have the TV on with no sounds, so there's just, like, weird visuals, like, this would work for that. Mm. You could just sort of have cool, like, pink and blue and purple vibes coming from the television. Yeah, we've all talked about how cool it looks. Other than that, though, yeah, this felt endless. I just couldn't latch on to anything that I found really compelling. So yeah, like a 4 out of 10. Like, I don't know. I think it's a swing. It just didn't work for me, I think, mostly.
Yeah, it's kind of a tough one to rate, I think, because it's sort of like there's legitimately, and with all sincerity, there's some excellent craft when it comes to designing some of these thingamajigs and the other kinds of stuff that are going on. So like, I really do appreciate that a lot, and I admire that kind of stuff. I also, yeah, like I said, the music was excellent, and really, really cool, and I think it had a good look to it. And you know, the difference between, you know, like a vibe version of the look and how those kind of things work. Yeah, I really admire that a lot. But that said, I just like I felt like the story needed about like five or six more things to go along with it, and just any character worth a good goddamn beyond the girl. Because like all Aaron Paul, and maybe it's just him. Like I don't mind him necessarily because I mean, I love Breaking Bad, but I just found him to be loud. And mm-hmm. So it's sort of like, and that kind of got on my nerves pretty quickly too. So, yeah, as like I said, I think it's a good look. I think it's a step in the right direction because Kuso is, well, it's what it is. But so it's a good step in the right direction. I really admire somebody taking a creative swing. So I think I'll probably go, just because of the technical stuff and the musical stuff and all that kind of stuff, I think I'll kind of go like 4.5, I think, just because like I didn't like it overall, but there's definitely parts that I really appreciate, admire, and like quite a bit. So I would definitely say like 4.5 out of 10. You're going the right direction there, Mr. Lotus, and keep going. Yeah, that's what I'd say out of 10.
Maybe my problem is my inherent racism.
Ah,
because really? I had. I was like, oh, yeah, this is by Flying Lotus, the guy who did The Man with the Iron Fists. And like, no, oh, that's RZA. Well, yeah. It's like, but hip-hop artist with weird-ass name, like, damn it. Okay, fine.
I can be better. Once again, the universe fails to bend to your will.
I mean, it would
be better.
It would make sense. Like, you think about the names, like RZA, Gizza, Old Dirty Bastard, Method Man, Red Man. Like it's sort of like you would think that there'd be a Flying Lotus in there.
It makes
because
sense.
It brings to mind the martial arts of
indeed,
which
yeah.
Wu-Tang Clan is fairly known for trafficking in. I don't know a lot about Wu-Tang. I know they are nothing to fuck with.
Yeah.
It was really fun watching Method Man just laying waste to people playing chess at Fantastic Fest a few years ago.
That was beautiful.
They did chess boxing and he just and people signed up to like do the thing and he just whooped them all. Dude is real good at chess.
Nice.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
One more thing should be chess boxing. That's great. Mm. Chess boxing, Helena. What's happening next?
Oh, God. Sherilyn Fenn. Sherilyn Fenn is Deanna Troi. And
chess boxing, the RZA.
So the guy's changing.
Julian Sands is in there somewhere.
Of course he is.
Yeah. We'll take a quick break then and we'll talk about the last little batch of things we're going to do next time. So next time we decided to watch three movies that are a single word with four letters as the title. I don't think we decided to do that specifically, but that's where
we
ended up.
We totally did.
Yeah, it was our plan from the start.
There you go.
We're going to watch Orca, the killer whale Jaws ripoff that's on Shudder. We're also going to watch Push on Shudder, which is not about the novel by Sapphire or the Matchbox 20 song, sadly. But it is about a pregnant realtor who has to fight off a slasher while in labor. So that could be very fun or very stupid or both. Looking forward to it. Then we're also going to watch Drop, which is the latest from Chris Landon. Who brought us such beautiful things as Freaky and Happy Death Day and Happy Death Day to You. He tends to love us and want us to be happy. So
did he produce Hard Eyes too, didn't he?
Oh, maybe. Did he? Was it on
Hard Eyes? Who could say? I thought, but well, that one, regardless, that one rules.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone should see Hard Eyes. And if you saw it once,
for sure.
Go see it again. But we are going to watch right now Orca, Push, and Drop. And I've been dressed this entire time, and I will say Abba Hi.
And we will have a short for next week as per usual. It will be called Attic Panic. That will be on our website, horrorshowhotdog.com. You can also, I think that one was from YouTube. You can probably find it there with a little bit of sleuthing. Speaking of websites, hey, if you listen to this episode right around the time it comes out, you'll have a couple of days left to get your submission to the Minnesota Genre Film Exposition submitted on Film Freeway. Give us a look there. Go to our Horror Show Hot Dog website and you'll find links to all the appropriate stuff. We've got about a week left before submissions close, and then we'll start jawing at you here about the event itself. So if you've got something, now's the time to submit it. Or if you know someone or somewhere who may want to submit something, get that information to them on the quick. All that being said, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie Dunn Austin. Yep, yeah, definitely echo what Matt said, and you know, certainly we're depending where we are in the country, the second half of the year is upon us very quickly, and there's a lot of film events and festivals and things that are second half. You know, Toronto and Sundance and that kind of stuff gets all the attention at the beginning part of the year, but there's a lot of second half things that are pretty cool. So depending on where you are in the country, you know, go check into those things. Like Film for Fright Fest is in London, and then you've got Brooklyn Horror Festival. It's coming up here soon, as well as Fantasia. And so there's a lot of really cool things that are around. So just kind of poke around and kind of check some of that stuff out. I was just going to mention, like, I don't think we would ever do it here, but in terms of horror movies, I don't know if I can think of one that was a lot more effective than the most recent one they did. I know they have a series of them, but this one was a little close to home because it was set in Houston. But the Trainwreck series they have on Netflix about Astroworld, and it took me, I think it came out a few weeks ago, and it took me 3-4 weeks to get up the nerve to finally watch it because it's like, you know, it's pretty close to home. There's a lot of Austin people that go over to Travis Scott's deal in Houston, and it's about sort of this breakdown of planning from Live Nation and the concert promoters and stuff that resulted in 10 people dying for no fucking reason. And so it's well made. It's pretty to the point. But it's, yeah, probably one of the best horror movies to see this year is about that god awful thing. So if you've got the nerve for it, if you can deal with it, it's like it is a good thing to see. But it's like it's not it is heavy. But yeah, I would say if you get a chance to, the Trainwreck for Astroworld is on Netflix and it would be worth your time, and it is horrific, certainly. Well, on that happy note, take care of yourselves, take care of each other. We'll talk to Roger soon. And it's always compulsory, so you know we're not gonna come to your house and just like, have you heard the good word about us? We're not gonna do that. But in the meantime, take care of yourselves and we'll talk to Roger later. All right, we'll see you later. Bye bye now.
It was also remarkable watching that, and then we watched Ballerina the other night.
Oh, that was good.
And fun, I was too. Like, that sucked, man. Really? Like, it had a couple of fun moments, but most of it was just the least tense chase scenes and the most video gamey fight scenes.
Oh, I love Tiny Woman blowing people up.
Oh. I just couldn't get into it. I don't know. It just did not pop. It was like Atomic Blonde, but with most of the firepower drained out of it. Like, plus, I am not invested in that universe at all, but still, it was just like all rubbery CGI kind of, I don't know, didn't have any zip for me. And then comparing it to this, which is just nonstop adrenaline.
Very different creatures, like, yeah.
Maybe sometimes people just have too much money to make a movie.
It's so funny with Atomic Blonde, too, because like around that same time frame, within the 18-month period, was it Red Sparrow came out? And it was like, Red Sparrow's like, it's a good 15 minutes beginning, good 15 minutes at the end, 9 hours in the middle. And it's sort of like,
guys, this is super serial.
It's just like, yeah, it's just like, my God. And it's like, did you know that the Eastern European bloc is kind of severe? Like, yeah, I've heard that.
We've all seen like, Eurotrip.
Like, fuck yeah, because it's like, Bratislava! But it's like, then you watch Atomic Blonde, and it's a whole, like, no, they get the idea of, like, you have to just hit these marks. But I haven't seen Ballerina, and, like, the Wick movies have been kind of hit and go. Like, I love the first one very much. But, like, the other ones, like, you got into my head, I couldn't necessarily tell you which villainous thing happens in which one necessarily. Like the first one I do, but like beyond that it's like it's kind of a blend. Like I'm never bored necessarily, but it's like the first one is the best one.
So but I will say this one's the best one, but I enjoy those. I think they're fun. That's one that I kind of look forward to is like my action franchise. There aren't many I like anymore.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the one that I'm like, there's enough like visual style in those movies and like the level of crazy shit they put together with stunt people is always fascinating to me.
And I did actually like Hotel Artemis quite a bit. I did actually really enjoy that one pretty well. I thought that was cool.
Which one?
Is that part of the John Wick series, or was it? It just had the same premise.
Well, it's about the hotel. It's the same. It's the characters. Oh,
Yeah.
It's the proprietor of the hotel, and then like the general manager person. So it's actually about the hotel itself, like not any of the Wick characters.
The hotel's the Continental.
Yeah.
I don't think those are related at all. I'm just looking through to see.
Isn't there a show about the hotel?
No, it's a different guy. There was a show. Oh, yeah, there was a show. But Hotel Artemis is a movie about another more different hotel for assassins. Like, no shit. Yeah.
Did I really just sort of make the whole fucking thing up in my head?
They were working on a show for the Continental, right? I just don't know.
Oh, I thought that had come out. Maybe I'm...
Oh, yeah, they were going to make it, but then what's his name?
Well, the one guy died. Apparently. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess that would make sense, though. Oh, I didn't know Redick, that was done before or after. That makes sense.
The guy who did Hotel Artemis also did The Fall Guy.
Fall Guy's fantastic. I love that movie. Yeah. I love that movie so much.
I'm still mad that nobody went to see it.
Yeah. I must have just sort of decided that Hotel Artemis was about the hotel from John Wick. But then I guess it was conflating that with the series that they're doing about the Continental. Yeah, well done, brain.
I mean, it is basically the same thing, so yeah. Mm. That was a cool movie, though.